This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Dean, does that music sound familiar to you? The popular public TV series Stargazers celebrated its 500th episode last week as it continues to explore the wonders and mysteries of outer space. And joining us to discuss the series, astronomy, and upcoming celestial events to watch for, Stargazers co-hosts James Albury, who's director of the Kika Silva Pla Planetarium in Gainesville, Florida, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer Dean Regas. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And James and Dean, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yes, my pleasure as well.
And by the way, congratulations on that 500th episode. That's just amazing.
Yeah, when we combine all these things, we do two shows a week. We do a five-minute show and a one-minute show, and we've been going about 5 years, so it all adds up after a while.
Yeah, so James, did you do anything special to celebrate when you hit that 500th episode?
Other than dancing, no. I haven't really thought of anything we are taping the episodes for April and May next week, Monday, so maybe we'll get a cake or something.
Good idea. Always good to have a cake before taping.
Yay, sugar.
How does it feel to hit that milestone?
Well, I can't believe we've been doing it for this long. It seems like just yesterday where we came down into South Florida is where we filmed the show. And I tried out 1 month, and James tried out a couple months later, and they said they couldn't decide. We were both too good, apparently, so they had to have both of us on there. And so they've changed that format of having two hosts, and we really play off each other, I think, pretty well.
So they hired both of you. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, and for a period of time, we also had a third co-host with us, Marlene Hidalgo, mm-hmm. and her family moved up to New Jersey not too long ago, so that's why she hasn't appeared on the show since then, because it's a bit far to travel, but I've been watching Star Hustler that was hosted by Jack Horkheimer from when I was a very little kid, because that show aired for the first time in November of 1976.
And that was where the idea for Stargazers came from, wasn't it, James?
Yes, it was. Yeah, the purpose of the show is, as Jack put it, was to give everyone a celestial hors d'oeuvre and have them wanting for more. So we encourage our viewers to kind of, after they watch the show, turn off the TV, go outside and look up, and you'd be amazed at so many things that you can see in the night sky. Because one thing I've noticed, that a lot of people are interested in, they get their first interest in astronomy through astrology, knowing about zodiac signs and so forth, and most people don't realize that you can actually see your zodiac sign for your birthday in the sky right after sunset on your birthday. So it's nice that we do get a chance to talk about a lot of these constellations every week, and as the year passes, we go through the various cool events that are happening with the planets and so forth. So it's a good way to keep everyone in the know about what's going on above them.
So it's about naked eye astronomy, right, Dean?
Yeah, I think that's what the unique part is, that this is stuff that you can go outside, you can see. Doesn't matter where you live. If you live in downtown Cincinnati, you're going to be able to see a lot of these sites that we're going to be talking about. So that's what I think is unique, because we get to see, you know, pretty pictures that the Hubble telescope takes, and but to actually get out there and see it yourself, that's exactly what we're trying to do, because there's so many stars and constellations you can see, and then we focus a lot on where the moon is and where the planets are. And once they get a feel for that, people start to get hooked.
So how did you get started in astronomy, Dean? I mean, what got you hooked on this?
Well, it was a total accident. I mean, this was not anything I ever thought I was going to do for my life. I was a high school history teacher for a while. I worked at the Cincinnati Parks for a while doing nature ed. And at one of the parks, I was transferred to Burnett Woods by UC. And in there's a planetarium. My boss said, hey, Dean, we got this planetarium. You're in charge. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know where the North Star was. I didn't know where anything was. And so I was under the dome doing my training, and it struck me. It was like almost like a religious moment. I saw the stars up there, and I thought, oh, my God, this is the coolest thing. And I've turned that into a career. 18 years now I've been doing this.
18 years, wow, and it just kind of started almost as a fluke.
Complete accident. I probably would be a high school history teacher right now if I didn't go to that planetarium.
James, what about you? What got you started in astronomy?
Well, fortunately, where I grew up, we had a planetarium, and my dad was a big fan of astronomy, so when I was about 6 or 7 years old, we went to the planetarium in Miami, where coincidentally Jack Horkheimer is the director, and he had a show called Killer Comets and Things That Go Bump in the Night, which had something to do with it dealt with Comet Kohoutek. And when I looked at the program, I was terrified because it had this picture of the skull with comet flames coming off of it. And so I walk into the room.
And James, Kohoutek, wasn't that one of the – people thought that was just going to cause a mass disaster of some kind? Was that it?
Yeah. Yeah. They called it the killer comet. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to go to this big room where it's going to get dark and I'm going to learn about a killer comet. I was terrified. But when I went inside, there was this big machine in the center of the room. And once the show started and lights went down, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm outside. I can see the stars. And I really thought it was the coolest thing. So my parents took me to the planetarium repeatedly. And when I got older, around 14, because apparently they didn't have child labor laws in the 80s, I started working at that planetarium. And I really enjoyed being able to learn about astronomy and then share my knowledge with everyone who came to visit the planetarium. So when I went to college at the University of Florida, I said, you know, I want to major in astronomy so that I can direct a planetarium one day. And after I graduated from UF, there were many jobs that I had between now and then. But about 6 years ago, I started working here at the Kika Silva Pla Planetarium here at Santa Fe College. And Kika Silva Pla was the name of the mother of one of our benefactors. So we have a very unique name.
Okay.
Because a lot of people say, when I saw Pla, I thought, planetarium begins with Pla. I wonder if that's a typo. And then I realized, oh, no, that's the family name. So, but it's a really great experience. So if you ever happen to be in the Gainesville area, we'd love to have you all visit.
Yeah, and by the way, he is in Gainesville, Florida, not Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's Santa Fe College.
Santa Fe College in Gainesville,
People get that
Florida.
Mistaken a lot. They're like, oh, where James lives in New Mexico, right? I was like, oh, no, it's a little farther away from there.
Yeah, I had that initial confusion at first, too, James, when I was looking at the name of the planetarium and where it was at and the college it was at. I almost said, is this New Mexico or Florida? I'm really...
Yeah, we actually have there's a river that borders the Alachua County called the Santa Fe River, and that's one of the areas that it got its name. And our college actually celebrates its 50th anniversary this year, and we were named number one college, community college in America. So, yeah, we're quite proud of that. So between that and stargazers, I'm just, like, really excited.
Good plug, James. Good plug.
How many years does this make for you, James, as far as being involved in astronomy?
In astronomy?
I think, Dean, you said 18 for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, probably 30, almost 35 years, because I started when I was about 13 or 14 professionally. So, yeah, and I'm 48 now. So, yeah, I've been in astronomy almost as long as Dean's been alive.
Wow, yeah. Four decades since Comet Kohoutek, especially. I wasn't alive then.
That name alone is menacing.
Uh-huh, that's right.
James,
it's a good thing I don't have any hair, so I don't look as old as I actually am.
Well, I understand you're a bodybuilder, too. Is that right?
Yeah, I competed in the Gainesville Bodybuilding Competition in 2003, and I met my wife 2 weeks before that, and she was asking, why are you eating all the time? I said, well, I'm preparing for a bodybuilding competition. And, of course, she didn't believe me, so I invited her to the show, and I ended up winning the show. And I was like, oh, good. So my future wife, I didn't know she was going to be my wife, but she sees me standing there in front of 300 people in posing trunks, so that kind of leaves very little to the imagination after that. But my passion for astronomy is actually, she was the one who saw this job posted at Santa Fe College, and I applied, they liked me, and I was actually, now I'm able to do what I'd always wanted to do, and because of stargazers, since I knew I worked at that planetarium, when Jack passed away in August of 2010, they had guest hosts on the show, and I was watching the YouTube videos, because I don't often get to watch PBS at the right time here in Gainesville, but I would watch the episodes on YouTube and on the Jack Stargazer website, and I saw the various co-hosts, and when I saw Dean, saying, wow, he's charismatic, and I can listen to him. And he was, and Dean, you were enjoyable to watch. And I said, hey, he's going to be good if they, they decide to make him permanent.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And then I saw, Bill DeShong had contacted me. He was one of the producers. And I asked him, how do you go about being a guest host? Because I'd like to try my hand at guest hosting it one time. And they said, oh, yeah, well, come on down. And what we need to do is you need to send us an audition tape or something like that so we can see how you are on television. And I just happened to do an interview that past December for the total lunar eclipse on the winter solstice they had the previous year. So I sent that. They said, oh, looks good, so we'll invite you down. And I did the episodes for April of 2011, and they liked me. So Dean and I alternated back and forth. He would do 1 month, I'd do the next month, because traveling from Cincinnati to Miami is not cheap. But I can just drive down I-75, and eventually I get to Miami. So he usually flies, and I usually drive, but
I could drive down 75, too. It'd just take a little longer.
You'd have to leave like 3 days earlier.
Right.
But nevertheless, we had a good partnership. So they said, let's go ahead and make a show where it's an interplay between the two co-hosts. And that actually adds a little more flavor and variety, because we can actually play off of each other. So Dean, we usually write in the script so that he's the early evening astronomer and I'm the early morning astronomer, so I like waking up early in the morning to see stuff, so I get to see things like meteor showers and planetary conjunctions that happen early in the morning, and Dean gets to watch things like eclipses if they happen late in the evening or early in the evening and so forth.
Except for today, I woke up, James, to see the
you got up early?
The five planets, the five naked eye planets were up in the sky this morning. So we had Mercury, Venus, Saturn, Mars, and Jupiter lined up. And so that was very cool to see. It's right before sunrise, and it'll be up there tomorrow morning and Sunday morning, and maybe a couple more mornings you'll see Mercury too. But right before sunrise, you'd see these five planets going across the, they kind of.
And this is a naked eye thing. You can actually observe this.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's very cool to see that. So I did get up early this morning, James.
We're talking with James Ulberry and Dean Regas, the co-host of Stargazers. And how do you keep it, 500 episodes, how do you keep the topics fresh and interesting?
Well, it seems like there's always something to talk about, that's for sure. I mean, every month there's something new going on, especially with the moon. The moon is our best friend with there, because we know everybody can see the moon, what's up in the sky. And the thing that we get a lot of questions about is like people ask, what was that thing next to the moon? And it's a lot of times it's a planet. So we highlight those things when the moon, the planet, like Jupiter, they're going to be next to each other a lot this year. It's stuff like that that people would notice, and they say, oh, I wonder what that is. And we try to give an answer for that. And so every month there's always something new happening.
And the interesting thing is that a lot of these things happen 2 months. Well, we have to write our episodes in advance of when we tape them. So a lot of things in the sky are predictable. However, when you have something like a comet, we can't predict that very well. So if we know that the comet's going to be there, we don't know how bright it's going to be by the time the episode airs, but it's always kind of cool to be a prognosticator and kind of figure out what it is.
The predictable things are easy. Like we have the transit of Mercury coming up in May. That's when Mercury will go in front of the sun. So we're going to be talking about that. But then, like if we have a comet coming by, I remember a comet Ison came by, and we know full well the comets are unpredictable. And so we always say it may become bright. It may not become bright. You might see it. You might not see it. And I'm glad we did that, because we didn't see it last time.
How much feedback do you get from kids who become excited about astronomy through the show?
Oh, yeah, lots. We get emails a lot of times from teachers especially. That's what we've been getting a lot lately. They show the show in their classrooms. And so we get feedback from as far away as Alaska, the Bahamas. We got some from Texas and California. People see this all around the country. And we never know who all's watching it or what they're all doing. It's kind of weird being this detached from it, but we get to see all these email responses. And I went to a talk that I gave in Wisconsin. And I guess we're huge in Wisconsin, James. I mean, like, huge. Like, I walked out of the airport and people knew who I was. It was very weird.
Wow. Yeah, here in Florida, no one bothers me in the supermarket or anything. One of the interesting things about that, though, is because of social media and Facebook, a lot of my friends who I went to high school with, like, even if they live on the West Coast, they'll send me a message saying, hey, I just saw you on TV, and you're doing that same thing that Jack Horkheimer used to do. I'd say, oh, yeah, wow, oh, my gosh. And my mom said that the episodes are very short. They're only 1 minute or 5 minutes long. And she said, I just happened to catch you on TV. Had I gone to the bathroom, I would have missed you completely. So it's quite surreal that now even my son, who's 5 years old, is now watching me on TV the way I used to watch Jack Horkheimer. It's quite surreal when I realize that I'm on national television. So,
Dean, how's it feel, you know, to follow in the footsteps of somebody like Jack Horkheimer?
Oh, yeah, I was really nervous about it in the beginning, and I really even hesitated to use the catchphrase because they said, you know, at the end you say keep looking up, and I said I can't use keep looking up. That was his catchphrase, and so we pulled up some of the my first month's shows. I had a different catchphrase. I said, you know, I said keep looking up, but then I said also say hi to the stars tonight. That was my catchphrase. I tried to go. The producer's like, no, go back to the other one. So ever since then, so there's one or two episodes where I say hi to the stars tonight, but no, never took. Keep looking up is that's a gem. And so it's amazing to be in Jack's footsteps, and when we get feedback from people that remember the old show and they say we're so glad you're keeping up with it and keeping the tradition going, that really feels good.
You know, when I was growing up, Dean, astronomy was so fascinating to me and my friends. You think kids have that same passion? Is that still out there?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think I've just kind of realized that astronomy is everybody's hidden passion. They sometimes they don't know about it, but once they get exposed to it, it comes out. And it doesn't matter what age it is, if it's younger kids or adults. I just gave a talk for adults this week, and I could just see at the end their eyes were like lighting up. They wanted to really explore the universe, and I think that's just something that's part of us, and we're happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, there's some fascinating news, James and Dean, that I wanted to ask both of you about. Just came out recently. What is this I'm hearing about? The solar system may have a new ninth planet.
Yeah, I have some pretty strong opinions about it. You want to go first, James?
Well, first off, what's happened exactly? I mean, what's the discovery here?
Well, so these two astronomers have mathematically computed the existence of a planet. They call it Planet 9. They say that this planet's existence would explain the motions of some of these other objects that are way, way, way far away from the solar system. So this would be a big object that's very far from the sun but does influence other things. So when I first read that, I was excited. I was like, this is great. Planet 9, we got 9 planets. And then it kind of struck me as like, well, we haven't seen it yet. It's on paper that it could exist, but I have to say, until we see it, it don't count. It doesn't count until we see it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines too. Because I'm still kind of sad about Pluto, but I understand why Pluto.
Oh yeah, Pluto.
This doesn't bode well for Pluto, does it, James?
Either way, Pluto's out.
Well, this object that they're predicting is out there is more than 20 times as far away as Neptune. So it's one. Even if it's big, it's going to be really far out there, so it's going to be extremely small in the sky. And two, there's very little sunlight out there because the sun's here, not out there. So if it's made of any dark material like some of the icy moons and solid bodies are out there, it's going to be incredibly hard to see it. I don't know. There's a couple of theories floating around that maybe this object might be a rogue planet that was kicked out of our solar system when the solar system was forming and the planets were establishing their permanent orbits. And then some people have postulated even years before that there was like a brown dwarf or the corpse of a star that would happen to be orbiting our sun that we can't see.
So in layman's terms, this could be just a leftover of some kind?
Quite possibly. And then, you know, there's always been this talk of a Planet X or something out there that was, because that's how Neptune was discovered, because it was perturbing or it was causing effects in Uranus's orbit around the sun. And so John Couch Adams, who was an English astronomer, and Urbain Le Verrier, who was a French astronomer, they both came up with the calculations for finding it. But since neither of them had a telescope to observe it, they had to kind of get other astronomers to look for it. And John Couch Adams, he wasn't as well known, so it took longer for him to get astronomers to look for it. For Urbain Le Verrier, he was a little more popular, and he was actually able to get astronomers to look for it. And I believe the Cincinnati Observatory actually had something to do with the discovery of Neptune, because they were around at about the same time that...
Yeah, the observatory telescope came online in 1845, and Neptune was discovered in 1846. We got a letter saying, point the telescope there, you'll see it. And so we were the first, probably have the first astronomers in America to see Neptune with our telescope at the Cincinnati Observatory.
So, Dean, you were talking about the alignment of the planets that people can see for the next few days. You were talking about the Mercury transit's not till May, correct?
Correct.
So what are some things that are coming up this month that people can see?
Yeah, well, it's really all the planets are in the morning, so it's the morning show for all of that. So like I said, yeah, we'll have Jupiter's is over towards the west, southwest right before dawn. Then we got Mars, we got Saturn, we got Venus, we got Mercury. At nighttime, it's really the constellation Orion is the one that's taking charge. So he's the guy that's up in the south with the three stars in a row for the belt. So what we like to look at this time through the telescope is the Orion Nebula. We point the telescope at this huge cloud of gases and dust that are forming new stars. And when you see it through the telescope, you can see these dust lanes. You can see four bright blue stars in the center of it. It's a gorgeous sight.
And on February 23rd, the moon and Jupiter are going to be really close to each other in the sky. So pray for clear skies, because you guys in Cincinnati will be able to see it, and we here in Florida will be able to see it. So, and the moon's going to make a couple of passes each month near Jupiter, but this one's going to be the one that's timed just right, that it'll be right under Jupiter. And Jupiter right now is in the constellation of Leo the Lion. It rises at about 9 o'clock, but by that time it'll be rising at about 8 o'clock in a couple of weeks, so you'll see it easily by 8 o'clock, 8:30, and the moon, the waning gibbous moon will be right next to it. It's right after the full moon the day or two before.
That sounds like an episode we did.
Yeah, it is.
Right, it'll be coming up. Yeah, we've got that one. And then,
we did it like 2 months ago, though.
That's right, I know. And next week, I'm very excited about next week's episode. It is our moon joke episode.
Oh, moon jokes.
We're telling all the bad possible moon jokes you can ever hear, and all I can say is we apologize.
Oh, no. Can you give us at least one example?
Oh, that was the best one.
That's the worst one.
No, that was the best one we got. One. The rest are all
hey,
bad.
Dean,
yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell a joke. Hey, Dean.
Yeah.
How does the moon get its haircut?
I don't know. How does the moon get its haircut?
Eclipse it.
You came up with a whole show of this?
A whole 5 minutes, one after the other. It's going to be rough, but I love it.
It's going to be very, very rough. Any other events we should be looking for in the next week or so?
Nothing in the next week or so. Jupiter is the next planet that's coming to the night sky.
Okay.
And so we can't wait for Jupiter to come around. That's going to be our next big event at the observatory. We're going to see Jupiter. Jupiter night is going to be March 12th. That's when it returns to prime time. And so can't wait for that.
What about some of the programs that are coming up at the observatory? What are some things that are going to happen?
Yeah, so we're open every Thursday and Friday to the public. You just have to call ahead of time, and you can make an appointment to see the telescope. If it's a clear night, you get to look through the telescope and see stars, star clusters, and that Orion Nebula. That's the big thing. We're doing some Valentine's events, and those have been sold out for months. It's crazy. We're a very romantic spot, apparently. We also do late-night date nights at the observatory. Those are sold out, too. So we're going to be posting a lot more events soon, and people can visit our website, CincinnatiObservatory.org, and see all the things that are coming up.
And we have a link to that at WVXU.org as well. So question is, James, you're looking forward to the next 500 episodes?
Yeah, I 500, goodness. I guess
boggles the mind to think about it, doesn't it?
Well, the cool thing is one of those episodes is going to be about the total solar eclipse that's happening in 2017. And I guess by the time we get to our 500th episode, we'll be talking about the next lunar eclipse that we can visit, total lunar eclipse we can view in the United States. That'll be in 2018. So,
Lots to think about ahead of time.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, including hitting 1,000 episodes. So
that would be cool. That'd be cool. One other thing
more
people.
Cake.
that people don't realize is that James and I are both volunteers at this. The station down there in Florida doesn't pay us to be their stargazers. So we've been working on generous donations from our membership over the years to get us down there. So if folks are interested in participating, helping us out, we have a link on the Cincinnati Observatory website. If you go to join, you can help donate to the cause.
Keep you guys going.
Oh, we love it. Yes.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, sir.
Stargazers co-host James Albury, director of the Kika Silva Plaw Planetarium in Gainesville, Florida, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer Dean Regas.